Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. Listen on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Now available free for both iPhone and Android devices.
Joining us now is Anat Admati. She and Martin Helwig have written one of the most talked about new books of the year. Books called The Banker's New Clothes. If you look at, I don't know what they call these, the vanity quotes or whatever, where you send the book out and you get reviews from people. I mean, you look at the people who are on here, Sheila Bair, Neil Barofsky, Eugene Fama, Simon Johnson, Mervyn King from the Bank of England, Alan Meltzer, I mean, Ken Rogoff, Paul Volcker. People think this is very important because the question about how to deal with the banking system in the United States and around the world is, as you write, so very important to our economy. And there are so many misconceptions. And the great thing about this book is that there are, you go to great lengths to put in ordinary language what is actually happening. Before you even get to making your points, you outline how banks make loans, you outline what banks do with them and what can go wrong, so people really have an understanding of this. And I'd like to begin, and I've got Sheila and Tom here as well. We're all dying to talk to you about this, but I want to begin with the very first misconception. People do not understand what bank capital is. They say when banks have to hold X amount of capital, they think that means the banks are putting it aside and it's stuck somewhere and they can't use it and they can't make loans.
That's the most insidious fallacy around, that people don't even understand the words, and so we don't even get to the starting point of this question of what this is about. It's about borrowing, it's about indebtedness, it's about how you fund, it's not about what you hold or set aside or, you know, being prevented from doing something with it. Once you, if you say it that way, which the bankers don't want to clarify quite and use a jargon that's confusing, then we're not even beginning to talk about
it. How do you respond to the idea that we need an international banking system and that banks should be small? I think of M&T Bank in Buffalo as being iconic in that regard. Thousands of other banks out there that wake up every day and go, well, we're not J.P. Morgan or we're not Citigroup, et cetera. It seems like two different rule books should be needed. Do we need big banks with an international projection?
I think one of the things we're realizing about the big international banks is that just being international makes it more difficult to resolve them or to let them fail, because they, in trying to do resolution or sort of bankruptcy, which is different legally in every country, it is very, very intractable and very difficult to do. And we saw this in Lehman, and Lehman was nothing relative to these big banks today. So it is a problem. It's a huge problem.
Professor Admati with us. The book is The Banker's New Clothes. Here's Sheila Dharmarajan.
Professor, CEO after CEO has come on our airwaves, in fact, and said, look, we can't lend, we can't lend, we can't lend. You can't restrict our lending because of these new rules, or we can't help the economy. Are they just pulling the wool over everyone's eyes? What do you say to them?
Well, this is just depends on what rule they're talking about, but certainly not about capital requirements. They don't stop them from doing anything. The problem is not that they don't have money to lend. J.P. Morgan's balance sheet, by U.S. accounting standard, has a third of its assets in what they call loans. The rest is other things. And that does not include $1.8 trillion netted derivatives. So, you know, out of the $4 trillion of assets, you know, he has $700 billion of loans. So there's no problem money. Here they want to pay out to their shareholders. They could lend that. What's the problem? Many companies in the economy lend, invest in whatever, and they don't pay out. Warren Buffett doesn't pay out. They invest. The banks can invest, and the notion that we stop them is just false.
When you look at the banking challenge today and the idea of getting to the new clothes, the banker's new clothes is the book, who's discussing the new clothes? We did the Volcker rule. We did Dodd-Frank. We've done macroprudential is the phrase. I think they invented it at Stanford. It was three quarters down from you. There's all this discussion, but where are the new clothes? Who's manufacturing them?
Well, there is a whole collection of tailors around. There are lots of people who say all kinds of things. And that's what the challenge was in the book, too, is to kind of get into everybody's head why they're saying what they're saying, what it is they're actually saying. Does it make sense? Put it in the right context. All of those things. So there are all kinds of flawed arguments from directly on banking to extraneous things like, you know, we can't enforce, therefore we can't regulate, you know, shadow banking or other kind of scare things that are are meant to keep the status quo. So somehow lots of people, the bankers, starting with the bankers and others, want to maintain the status quo pretty much.
Now, you're a professor at Stanford, which, of course, is very close to my heart because I was actually a GSB graduate myself. You know, a large part of your book is a historical surveillance of the banking system. How important do you think it is to teach the next generations of CEOs, of investors, this history of the banking regulation system?
Well, we tried to keep to the minimum what the history is. Some people are not interested in it. We wanted to kind of write on the need-to-know basis. So that's why I thank Tom for pointing out the notes are sort of a whole part of the book. That's almost half the book. So a lot of it is in the notes. You don't have to read all of that. But it's important to understand banking because banks can help the economy. But at some point, they start almost being a drag on the economy. And so we just have to sort out what their place in the economy
really
is.
Well, what their place is. We have different banking systems. We hear that every day. Small bankers email me and go, this debate you're having is completely removed. What do we do that simplistically solves the big bank issue? Is it to make shadow banking a completely separate organization?
Well, shadow banking is kind of an unfortunate term. Shadow banks are just banks that the regulators are not looking at right now, and some of them are directly connected to the regulated banks. So many of them, and you know, even money market funds, they are part of the shadow banking. So somehow they're not regulated the same way. So the shadow banking system is just a system. We just need to look at everybody who might affect the system. And so, and it includes some the small banks also.
Right.
My short answer to your question, how to make this a better system, is to make them look closer, more similar to normal companies that
okay, to normal companies. Sheila, this goes back to Henry Kaufman, who says we got to get skin in the game. We've got to get back to some form of quasi-partnership structure.
So what do you consider a normal company, though? I mean, do you consider Apple a normal company with $137 billion of cash in the books? Do you consider Berkshire Hathaway a normal company? What's this notion of normal when it comes to banks?
That's a good question because there's always, you know, every corporation uses other people's money. So what we're talking about is the company that has all this cash, whose cash is it? Well, what are they doing with it? So there's always this tug of war. The problem in banking is that a lot of the other people are depositors and other creditors who have no say in what they do, especially not about the risk. So everything gets distorted in the bank because of the shareholder of the owner creditor conflict. And that's the big governance problem. So normal company has less creditors to begin with, so that the governance problem becomes more on the shareholders.
There is a moment in Simon Johnson's 13 Bankers, chapter 5 or chapter 6, he begins with the language of the SEC in 2004, I'm guessing in the summer, where they let them have more leverage. The bank said, we can't make money. We need more leverage. And the SEC said, why not? Are we going to go there again?
Well, it looks like we're going to back to the same system, which allows the banks to use their risk models to essentially determine their own equity requirements. And they, you know, they optimize. This is what Jamie Dimon said. They'll optimize those risk-weighted assets. And that's part of what was done in 2004, which was to allow them to use the Basel II system that Sheila Bair kind of stopped the commercial banks from the deposit-taking institutions from using that helped the U.S. banks a lot.
That's one of the most interesting things in your book. For the most part, you talk in generic terms about bankers, but you take on Jamie Dimon specifically and his comments to the effect that J.P. Morgan Chase has a fortress balance sheet, and you say that's nonsense.
Well, actually, I was yesterday in a panel in which J.P. Morgan came out as a highly systemic bank, which we kind of know that part of it is because of their enormous derivative position. And they basically can go on to do just about anything with this size because they are just too big to for anybody to try to cope with. Therefore, people more easily deal with them.
Would you agree he has a new humility after what happened with the derivatives?
Well, that smile got wiped for a few minutes off his face, but he still speaks and he still runs the show.
You're tough. Professor, you're just vicious. Let me bring in someone else who's vicious. Sheila Dhamarajan joining us today here worldwide on Bloomberg Surveillance. Sheila? Red button over there. Sheila.
I got the red button. I got the red button.
Very good.
You know, as much as you want to say about Jamie Dimon and the banks, if you take a look at how the stock performances have done over the past year, year and a half, they've done phenomenal. Shareholders love the banks right now. Everyone wants to get into the KBW index. What are people missing?
Well, what they're missing is a bigger picture. In fact, I asked somebody about Jamie Dimon specifically, and I was told he's not a big picture guy. So I find that alarming for the rest of us, because when Jamie Dimon's not a big picture guy, then the big picture economy gets forgotten in all of this. So I don't know who the shareholders are that benefit from this, but I don't think diversified shareholders like me do.
Well, one of the arguments that the banks always put forward is we need these gigantic banks to compete worldwide because we need to make big loans, and they point to loans made recently, you know, tens of billions of dollars, and yet J.P. Morgan makes more money off of trading than banking. Do they need a gigantic trading operation in order to make loans?
They certainly do not. They could make loans with money that they are choosing to use otherwise. It's just their choice. It's not a problem of having money.
No, I don't mean to interrupt. Please.
In terms of the global banks, let me just say, this notion that it's our business as the public to make sure that our champion banks win in competition, that's a very dangerous notion. Countries that allow their industry to be subsidized and succeed abroad sometimes pay dearly for that, like Ireland did.
Why is this no different than any other industry, in that the reason the loans are all gummed up and the reason we're doing all these other businesses is the microeconomics doesn't work? There's just too much capacity. Do we need to go back to a level of Andrew Jackson?
Well, we don't know how big the industry should be because the markets are all distorted.
But the answer is smaller. Not probably, like Canada maybe, but smaller.
Probably the industry has overcapacity. The industry is probably too big, and it's grown in part thanks to subsidies and other distortions. So we don't know what the right size is until we correct some of these distortions and then let the market decide how big an industry we need. Do they have a business?
You mentioned Ireland's banking system. You also talk about the Japanese banking system in the book. In fact, you say banks have been too slow to recognize losses while cutting new lending, very similar to what Japanese banks were doing in the 90s. Is the U.S. turning Japanese?
I'm afraid that there is a Japanese resemblance in the way Europe is handling its very, very unhealthy banks that are all mingled up with their governments, and some in the U.S. as well. The denial of losses is staggering. Some of what banks do is only done so as not to recognize loss. Not restructuring mortgages sometimes is only for the appearance of being able to keep stuff in the book value and not recognize it.
You don't believe in the tangible book value of some of the banks right now in America?
I do not. And the market's telling you this. Even with the subsidies, the market's telling you it's less than book value.
This has been wonderful. Thank you so much. Anat Admati with Martin Helwig, The Banker's New Clothes, with a wonderful car. I think Michael McKee's on the cover, actually.
I was going to say, the first one looks like Lloyd Blankfein, the second one, Jamie Dimon, but I'm not sure who the guy with the
goatee
is.
Some people want to put faces on them, sort of, you know, superimpose all kinds of faces. Well, I'm not
a
women
banker.
None of them
that
are wearing a bow tie, though, Tom.
Yeah, let me get you your attention. Paul Volcker says the book explains in plain language. 85 years old, Professor Meltzer says this excellent book should be read by everyone. A guy named Rogoff says, almost subversive in its clarity. A guy named Fama out at Chicago says, a must read for concerned citizens. Boy, does she line up the blurbs. I can't keep up. Yeah. Anat Admati, thank you.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM satellite radio channel 113. Copyright 2013, Bloomberg LP.